Guru Nation, welcome to episode 794 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I interview Justin Rudolph. He's an associate director at a small pharma company, and he spent 20 years at big CROs, small CROs. He's had every single job imaginable at those places, from project assistant to CRA to CRA2 to senior CRA to senior CRA level 2. Principal CRA, clinical team manager, project manager, senior project manager. You get the idea. He's done it all at the CRO level and now sponsor level. And I'm here to talk to him about his career because I want people to understand the industry better. And I want people to understand maybe they're just starting out in their career. Maybe they've been in the career for a while, but you can learn from people like Justin. We have a wealth of experience. And by the way, Justin's open to consulting now as well. His LinkedIn's in the show notes, so go check it out. Also in the show notes, give a shout out to my first sponsor, Inato. Inato is a website where you can get studies for your site for free. No, there is no catch. No, they do not get involved in contracts and budgets. Yes, you do need therapeutic area expertise. It's not so easy to get a study. They are very picky about the sites that they take on because they want to make sure that they give the sponsors the value that they've entrusted Inato with. But if you're a site and it motivates you to elevate your game and make sure that you can get yourself studies and put yourself in a position to do so with Inato's help, it's all for free. Check it out in the show notes. Also in the show notes, Creo. I use Creo every single day. I keep track of it now to keep track of what my staff are doing. So I look at the CTMS. I see what visits are pending, what visits have happened, who's pending to be randomized. It helps me manage the site better. Then it also helps track financials. It helps track invoices. It helps create invoices. It helps with eSource, eReg, eSignature, eConsent, auto-texting patients, a patient database. Everything rolled into one. You only pay for what you use. This way, I like Creo. You can grow into it. Check out Creo in the show notes as well. Hope you enjoy this episode with Justin. Guru Nation, thank you so much for watching. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share. This is a special one. I've got Justin Rudolph on. He's been on before. He's also been on a few live streams. Was it just one live stream? The one we did yesterday, was that the only live stream?
Yes, it was just that one, yeah.
So you were on a podcast and a live stream, and now this is the third time, but we're going to go in depth as far as your career. And I mean, this is a person who has done just about everything in research. And we got started, we were just talking around the same time. We both got started in 2005. You as a project assistant at a CRO where you spent 12 years. So you really like climbed the ladder at this particular CRO. You went from project assistant to CRA to CRA2 to senior CRA to senior CRA level 2 to principal CRA, which I don't even know what that is, to clinical team manager. And then you basically made a lateral move to another CRO as a CTM. And then project manager, and then now you're clin ops, an associate director of clin ops for a sponsor. So you've worked at a couple of the biggest CROs, a small one in there, and now a small sponsor. So you like in a 20, almost a 20-year span, you've done a lot. And is your Everyone could go connect with Justin, by the way. His LinkedIn is underneath this video and in the show notes, so you can see for yourself and feel free to message him, ask him questions. Do you think your career path was typical of someone who stays almost 2 decades in the space? Like, do you think this is actually fairly common, or was yours like a little
I don't
unique
know.
in?
I think that, I mean, you would know this more than I would. I think the trajectory typically starts off as a CRC at a site, and then you become a CRA from there, and then you start going that path. Whereas I started as a project assistant at a large mega CRO and worked my way up through the ranks of CRA. I think I monitored for like 9 years, or 7 years or something, 7 to 9 years. I can't, it's all a blur at this point. So to kind of go back into the CRA roles, principal CRA at that CRO was like the penultimate level of CRA that you could achieve at the time. I don't know if there's any changes now, but a lot of people looked at that role as, okay, you're a permanent CRA, meaning you don't have any aspirations to kind of do CTM work, or anything like that. It's you are a CRA. That's how, like I, you know, some of the management at the time kind of felt that that role was. Not really in practice, though, because from the CRA's perspective, we looked at it as just the next step in being CRA. Because once
The
you get to the principal
principal
CRA,
theory?
once you get to that role, you start taking on CTM tasks to kind of support the CTM. You don't travel as much, but you're the lead CRA on a study, and you take on more like CTM type responsibilities. For trial.
So essentially, as a principal CRA, you get involved with sites when there's issues, more or less.
Right, in monitoring trip review, monitoring trip reports, training, developing training, those kind of things.
What's the craziest thing you've seen at a site? Like where you were sitting back, maybe it was as a principal CRA, maybe it was as a regular CRA, where you stop to reflect and you're like, wow, I can't believe this actually happens.
Let's see.
I know there's a lot, but like one or two
There,
have to
there,
stick
there.
out.
One, okay. So I would say probably the most memorable was I was working on a trial, and it was for, you know, an infectious disease. I'll just put it that way. And there were some inconsistencies with the source, to the point where it was just BS, if that makes sense. So the study required a fever at screening, and sometimes there wasn't fevers collected, but that was okay as long as they have documented evidence of, you know, an antipyretic taken within like 3 or 6 hours of the screening events. I can't remember all the details. And then so, like, if there wasn't a temperature, then sometimes there was, you know, antipyretic use documented, but it was in dosage that weren't really real. So, like, 400 milligrams of acetaminophen, which you can't get, it's like 375, or like you would have to take like the children's Tylenol and like pour a non-specified amount in order to get 400 milligrams, right? So, and it was a lot of inconsistencies. Like stuff was directly entered into the CRF and not into the source. So it just kind of like, what's going on there? There was password sharing at the site, and
How did you know about the password sharing? Like, how did you figure that
oh,
part
I
out?
walked into the study coordinator's office during an on-site monitoring visit and saw somebody entering data into the EDC that did not have access.
Wow. Okay, that's a dead giveaway.
Right. And then it's like, and as soon as I come in, it's like, is that our EDC? And then, like, you know, the quick whatever on the keypad, and then jump to another screen. Like, you gotta be kidding me.
And this was the
But
same
yeah.
site.
Same site, yeah. I mean, this was a site that I had been assigned a site to clean up, because like I was typecast as the guy that came in and cleaned everything up. And problematic sites, but I don't know. I had a manager that said I thrived on conflict.
Do you,
So
was this as a principal CRA when you this particular example or experience?
no, it was like, it was more, it was towards the end. So yeah, I mean, it was closer to principal CRA. It may have been senior CRA too.
Okay.
But you know, it's one of those things that it was a really weird situation going on. Of course, there were QA and audits involved, so it all got sorted out in the end. But it took like this was a site that I had to go into to clean up because one, they were really backlogged on the data, and you know, come to find out in monitoring, and I was going there 4 or 5 days a week for a month, you know,
Four or five
and
days. So were they
sometimes,
like a super high-end roller this site, or I see.
it was a seasonal infectious disease study, so those are going to be really high enrolling.
Wow.
And for like a month, I would go there and monitor the data, and sometimes I'd have a co-monitor, and sometimes I wouldn't, and just some of the stuff, you know, that we saw was just,
Four or
you know, it's
five days a week, you're
crazy.
basically working at the site with the
Yeah.
staff.
Yeah, pretty much. They had a lot of data. And it
Did
was all in,
you
and they
get a
were
lot?
interested in getting it cleaned because that's how they got paid.
Right, so they wanted to work with you. Did you end up like making bonds with any of the staff being there that often, or
In this particular case, no. It was at a certain level, it became like they caught on to the fact that I had caught on to what was going on,
Yeah.
and it became very adversarial.
Oh, they went the other way, became adversarial.
Yeah. And it and I actually, I mean, this is one of the like I think it's a badge of honor, but the site they're like, you're not welcome back here. You know, I've been kicked off a site, I think twice. And any good CRA I know, there's always at least one site they got kicked off of because they were doing their job when nobody else before them was. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard things like, "Oh, well, the previous CRA never asked me to do that. Well, that's why I'm here. They didn't ask you this
That's why.
because they were do doing it correctly. Or I've been doing this 15 years and nobody's ever asked me that." Like, well, you know, things have changed. And this is what is required.
That's why we're in this mess in the first place.
Exactly.
Interesting. And so was this like a like surprisingly common experience among sites, or was this like an outlier?
I would say it's an outlier. I think most sites want to do a good job. Some want to, but can't. Just based off of the competency that they have at the site. I've like some of my better sites. I've worked with CRA or CRCs that were brand new to research. It's like their first trial. I love those because I get to help mold and shape that CRC. And okay, this is how you need to document things. And but it all comes down to are they coachable? Because there's some CRCs that aren't really coachable and they feel like they know what to do or they don't want to listen to what I have to say. And you know, not that I'm always right, but I mean, there's a good track record there. And like I've always enjoyed the ability to help and train and mold not just CRCs but CRAs. Like I spent a good portion of my time as a CRA training other CRAs as both a mentor and doing sign-off visits and all that. And like there were often times where because I was based out of the office at that point, I wasn't remote, that remote CRAs would come into the office on the company dollar for me to work with them and train them on, okay, this is how you should track things. This is a helpful way to you know, process the information so you can write your report in a quick, efficient way. Because like I said last night, and I'll repeat it today, when I first started off as a CRA, I struggled with trying to keep track of everything. So I had to come up with a system or I would fail. And since that wasn't really an option, I had to come up with a system that was efficient. And you know, the way my brain works, I guess it was very helpful to a lot of other people, and they were able to take my methods and processes to help them with efficiency. And one of the things that I see like early CRA struggle with is doing too much too fast. So you just graduate CRA school, you get assigned your first project, you're in the throes of IMVs, and okay, great. You've got 10 sites. The monitoring plan says I got to be out at all these sites within 2 months from the last visit. So you're going out there and you're doing all these visits and you're doing three sites in a week. And then, you got a week, and the next week you're doing two. And then before you know it, you're behind on reports, you're behind on other things. And it's different today than it was back then. You got a lot more systems to update than you did 10, 15 years ago.
Better or worse
But
today, like as far as getting behind?
it's harder today to get behind. Like I've talked to CRAs or like management executives now that were CRAs in the 90s, and they say stuff like, I never had to work on a plane. I always had my stuff. I never had a late report. Now that could be, wishful memories on their part to some degree, but at the same time, I kind of believe it because there was a time, like I've worked with CRAs where there were no CTMS systems. I've always had a CTMS system, but they used to write this stuff in Word. They would have a Word template that they would write a report in, and it would always crash. And then, they'd lose it. And then so I've heard horror stories about that stuff. I've never experienced that because I always had some kind of CTMS system where the reports were to be written in. And the more that we get towards the industry of relying on technology and all these different systems, the more there is to do. Like there's systems for safety review. There's systems for deviations in addition to the CTMS, where you try write your trip report, you document the subject visits and subject visit tracking and all that stuff. And now with remote monitoring and risk-based monitoring, there's other systems that you have to review and dashboards and tables and all this other stuff. It's just a lot more than what it used to be. And I don't know that it's any better. Like I haven't seen a great increase in quality, at all.
We talked about that yesterday as far as the quality is concerned. You seem to have think, and actually the general consensus is that quality has gone down quite a bit this last decade. But do you think all these extra systems, I mean, the reason they're in place is probably to avoid major issues from happening. And the side effect is, or the price we have to pay is that CRAs have to actually work more, but they're working like on more busy work as opposed to leaving enough time for the more important stuff, which would be like Alcoa-C with the site, GCP, protocol compliance. I mean, what is your take on this?
I think there's a lot of busy work.
More than
I
should
think there's
be?
a lot of busy work. I mean, I don't like busy work. Who does? I mean, there's things like when I was at the CRO that they're only being done to tick a box that says it was done. And that's it. That's all anybody's ever going to see, that okay, it was done. Be it a monitoring plan where it says I got to call a site once a month or once every week to discuss recruitment. Okay, well, I did it. I copied and pasted the template that I have my recruitment discussion into the CTMS to show that I did the call, but recruitment is still nothing or the same, or there's no difference weekend after, week after week. But the boxes are being checked. But does that allow for a real meaningful conversation on subject recruitment? I don't think so. Because they have too many sites, too little time, and too many systems to update.
Do you think we'll go back to less systems? I mean, Steve Jobs said the hardest thing is to make things simpler. Do you think there's a reason to make things simpler? You just mentioned quality, and do you think that's a reality?
I don't not in not, not manually, no. I think maybe with the advance of AI, there's some possibility to target use that to really identify the higher risks and like do a real risk-based monitoring, especially with these, you know, direct data capture and e-sourced.
Yeah,
I think
we're
that that's
doing
going
one
to
of those
be,
studies now.
yeah,
Direct data
and I think
capture.
that's going to be vital to being able to do real-time review, because I have not seen a real-time review, and maybe somebody's figured out and I just hadn't worked on that project, but it's always delayed like 72 hours because, or
Wow.
you know, you have requirements for sites to enter data into the CRF. But if they're using paper source and they don't enter it in, how are you doing real-time review? It's only real to the time that it's entered in the CRF, not the time that it was actually captured. So there's
Right.
always a lag.
There's even a lag on eSource that would go into EDC. I mean, it's the same issue. Like, the site would still have to enter the data. But there's even a lag, like, on eSource getting completed. You know, with eSource, it's easier to leave boxes unchecked because we don't know the answer yet. And by the time you do, it's later than it should be checked, right? And that gets back to the contemporaneous part of Alcoax. So that delays data entry as well. So yeah, real
Well,
time monitoring will be interesting if that ever becomes an actual thing.
it's a thing, but it's not real. That's what I'm, that's like, at least in my experience, right? I haven't seen it implemented in a way that isn't, there isn't some lag. Now, there's for certain things like with eSource, I mean, did the subject sit for 5 minutes prior to the ECG? That's not really a high risk thing, right?
Right.
You know, for most studies. But if it's something like panic high values and lab values that the
Right.
site runs at a local lab and they don't submit, they don't, I mean, and it's like, would technically it would be classified, or it could be classified as an SAE, or at least something to redraw the labs or confirm it, and they don't really do anything, and the CRO doesn't know about it, and the sponsor doesn't know about it until a monitoring visit a month and a half from when it occurred.
Wow.
Like, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
And like having incorporation, and we do have labs incorporated into CRFs, not the same way it used to be. I mean, I remember a time where all the lab data was transcribed from the lab into the CRF. Now it's just requisition number, date captured, time collected, and that's it. And then you have to go to the lab system to review the results. It's
Right.
not in the CRF. So you would have to set up another system to monitor the lab data. Now, some and most labs will, you'll, when you set up the lab, you'll have all the panic values and you'll have, okay, this is a high level that needs to be signed off on. And then there's panic highs and panic lows, right? And those you can build the systems to trigger, okay, this is going to email the medical monitor and the CTM and the medical director, whoever. And like you can set up a system like that, but you can't do that with a local. I mean, maybe you can. I haven't seen all local lab portals,
It would be
but
tough.
yeah, but most of the time, that's usually something that you use a central lab for.
Right. That's the benefit of having a central lab. I'm on a study now where it's direct to EDC entry, no source. We still use source, at least for progress notes, because I'm not comfortable. If we ever get audited, like what I've understood is it's not okay to tell the FDA sponsor told us to do this. Like,
Yeah,
we
that's
have our own
correct.
SOP, so
Okay.
we do have a bare bones source for that study. But yeah, we have to use a local lab for that one, and even to put the reference ranges in the EDC, our local lab says everyone's reference ranges are different based on their age, gender, and BMI. So it's like you're gonna have bunch of different kind of reference ranges. It's not just one range. It's a lot of different variations of ranges. So it's the EDCs running into issues with that. And therefore, we don't put reference ranges until a patient gets randomized because it doesn't make sense to do it for a screen failure. So it's a lot of complicated stuff. This idea of real-time monitoring, I mean, I know it's a thing, at least on paper, but for it to be actually implemented on a regular basis is, and to actually be authentic to the meaning of the term real-time monitoring, I think we're far away from.
No, for sure. And I think every process document that I've seen is usually like real time means within 72 hours. I mean, okay.
Okay. But
So
luck can
how about
happen in
just within
72 hours.
72 hour monitoring? Call it within 72 hour monitoring instead of real time.
A 3-day
Maybe
monitoring.
3 day monitoring. Yeah. And it's only and there and generally speaking, real time monitoring is always targeted. It's targeted to what is the risk that like what was the flag or the panic value or whatever that targeted that real-time review requirement.
Do you have, you went from CRO to CRO to another CRO, now at a sponsor, a small sponsor. Did you ever get the bug to start a site? Like, you've been to so many sites, did you ever think, hey, I can do this too? A lot of CRAs get bit by that bug.
I know a couple of CRAs that got bit by the bug.
Everyone knows
I
a
never
couple
got bit by the
CRA.
bug. Yeah, I never got bit by the bug. I liked what I was doing. I liked what I was doing. And at the time of my life that I was a CRA, and I didn't really want to step out on the ledge and do the site to create a site. Like you've said, not everybody is an entrepreneurial in spirit. And I am more so recently, the last few years for sure. And I've actually thought about, starting a site within not within any time that I imagine, but like it is something that is of interest to me and maybe a possibility in the future. My
That's good.
circumstances are different. Like I've got four kids, sole income provider. So like I generally take a safer path. But like my dad was at a company for 40 years, and they like I was talking to him one time, and people still get laid off. So there is no safe path, I
Right.
think, in general. You could be loyal to a company and still get laid off.
Yeah, you can. And what about a safe career? Do you think CRA, you mentioned AI, do you think CRA for the most part is a stable career, even going forward?
I think for the most part, yeah. I think that AI will reduce the workload necessary. And I think you may see a increase in this, quality of life of a CRA, but that's going to come with a subsequent decrease in salary.
Yep. Yeah, we're the inflated salaries of CRA. Is it true? Like, okay, you go CRA, then you go like project manager, which is a common pathway where you th it's on paper you're leveling up, but the salary's the same or slightly less. Is that accurate or?
Depends. It depends on the size of the organization and how it's
Right.
structured. So most larger CROs, like the CRA will oftentimes, especially a higher level CRA, will make more than a CTM.
Right, right,
Sometimes
right,
it just
right.
depends. Like it depends on how the time in the seat. But like a principal or a higher level CRA would be equitable to like a CTM. Some CROs will look at the CTM and project manager as a lateral move. Some won't. So if you go from CTM to project manager, so like some of the CROs I've worked with have said that's lateral, which it's totally different. Like I learned more from the switch to CTM to project manager Then I learned from the switch to CRA to CTO.
Wow.
That's how much different it is. Because you're not only are you dealing with the clinical team and the monitoring and all that, but you're also dealing with biostats, database locks, vendors, vendor contracts, payments, invoicing, recognizing units based off the contracts and timelines and everything. It's totally different. And to say that it is a lateral move is ridiculous, in my opinion. It's not the same. It's not the same. Now, I know that some smaller CROs, like they'll have clinical project leads or clinical project managers or different terms at every CRO. And they're basically a PM CTM combo.
I've seen
And
that too.
I've done that role at large CROs, and it's not fun. And I mean, it is very, especially with a larger organization, I think that you have many more systems, many more moving parts that you've got to keep track of than at a smaller organization where you like there's people take on more hats. They wear more hats. And I feel like that's one thing that I would like to see the industry go back to, but I don't think it ever will, because like smaller organizations, and when I started out, like the CRAs were did regulatory stuff. They knew regulatory.
Right.
I don't know that that's the case anymore. You
But what do you
know,
mean? I
I
mean,
don't.
they know, they all know what ISF is and what they need to look for, and or is, are you saying it's so specialized now, like the TMF
Like setting up the
specialists?
regulatory documents, 1572s, delegation logs, all that stuff, and like the requirements around them, like, oh, well, you have to have a CV that's with signed within 2 years of the date on the 1572, or the medical license needs to be this, and you can go get it from this website if you just have the number. And like all those requirements that the FDA has indicated that, okay, this is the minimum requirements for what is required on a CV or whatever. Like they just don't, they like that was in a project assistant. Maybe I know it because I was a project assistant. I was collecting those documents. But when I moved from that to CRA, like that was an easy thing for me because I'd already done it for a year. You know, collecting reg docs and all that was always the easiest part of being a CRA to me. But I just don't think that I see that level of, again, maybe it's just my experience from the way that I came up. That, like, I just don't see that the knowledge there in the CRA base for regulatory requirements or even IRB submission requirements.
Maybe you're onto something there. I come from the same old school as you. All most of my experiences are at the site level. And yeah, I mean, we as a coordinator, you learn all those stuff, all of it. If you're at the right site, usually a smaller one, you're doing study startup, you're doing recruitment, you're doing regulatory, you're doing source, you're making the source, you're completing the, I mean, you're doing everything, right? You're making sure the PIs are signing where they need to sign. You're making sure the patients are showing up. You're doing IP accountability. I think there is something to be said about the larger the organization, the more streamlined and hyper specialized they become, the less marketable those employees actually end up being later on.
It's almost like by design. When you have an industry where
That's
you
what
have
I
so
thought.
much
People say I'm
turnover,
conspiracy theorist.
no, when you have an industry where there's so much turnover because people are leaving to go to another organization to make more money because it's cheaper to do that than to pay them a raise because they're still going to leave in a year after that. So, absolutely, like this the silos that they've built within an organization prevent that person from being
Marketable
a
asset.
well-rounded individual.
And who is they that's doing this? You think it's the execs at the CROs?
Well, I think, well, yeah. I mean, it's whoever's making the decisions to structure the companies that way. But again, like the intent is what's important. I think that the intent is most likely to try to build inefficiencies because if you have somebody that does startup and only startup, then you can really make the argument that, oh, well, we can do startup in 3 months because we know startup, that we have a group of individuals dedicated to startup. Well, that may be true, but if there's so much turnover in that role, which that I see that more than CRAs, there's more turnover in project associate, project assistant, like startup, those kind of roles than any other role.
Why do you think? Do you think
That
because
I
they
see.
want to be a CRA and their current employer is not giving them a chance, so they go somewhere else?
That or they get promoted to CRA within the organization.
Oh, within. Okay, so you could be, yeah, true.
Yeah. But I think
Yeah.
also it's like what I mean, from my experience, it's when talking to people in this role after I get noticed that they're leaving, I'm like, oh, what's going on? Like, are you okay? Is that, you know, it's like, it's just too much. It's just too much.
Interesting. All
They're
right.
overworked. They're replying at late at night. They're over allocated to studies and they don't have the time because they're new into the role.
If
And,
you
you know,
were, I have two questions for you. I don't want to forget the other one, so I'm gonna write it down. If you were to start a CRO from scratch right now to be competitive, let's say you don't care about growing to be that big. You just want to keep certain clients happy and make a decent living for yourself. And let's say, like a 20-person organization. Would you streamline all these things, or would you, how would you do it?
I mean, smaller organization, you have less flexibility to build all these silos. So you would have to have people wear different hats. You would do the training where the CRAs, and you know, maybe there's something to say about the, you know, the team camaraderie that comes along with it. Because I remember when I started off, like CRAs were assigned early on in the study, like not after the first IMV. Or a month, you know, leading up to the SIV, but it was the CRAs that were collecting the reg docs were the same ones doing the SIVs and doing the IMVs and doing the closeout visits. They stayed on the study. Now, like you have totally different team members doing SIVs, all at different level of competencies. And, you know, that translates to sites. All operating at different levels of competency because they weren't trained properly, or they were trained properly, or they know enough to know when they should ask questions, right? So I don't know. Like I would like to see. I mean, if it was if I had carte blanche, I would say have the CRAs, maybe have like an admin person to do the filing and whatnot. And train them on that those aspects, but have CRAs assigned from the very beginning. And they're the ones talking to the sites, building those relationships early on in the sites, and doing the feasibility, the SIV, and all that, and then doing the monitoring visit. And then when they finish the study, they have to do it all over again. I mean, I
Gives you
always
more
got bored
ownership,
doing the
right?
same thing over and over again. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know how many, like, it is so frustrating. Like, you're gonna make me go on a rant here. Like, one of
That's
the most
good.
frustrating things was to see people come in, especially like SIV teams or startup team. There's no accountability because they come in, they do the work, and then they move on. They don't have, they're not, if they messed up or if there's no way for me to go back and retrain that person on what they messed up or this is how it should have been. Because they're gone. They're off somewhere else. They don't have the time to come back and revisit the stuff that went wrong. So it's on who the new assigned person to fix or clean up. I used to call it a drive-by, because that's what it was. It was like
There's no ownership.
drive-by, drive-off.
Yeah, there's no ownership, and it's easier to defer responsibility. Like even I own a site, so we hire CRCs. We have turnover as well. I think this new team, God willing, they're gonna stay. But previously, we had a lot of turnover. So new coordinator comes in, they work, everything's good, but they take less ownership when the mistake wasn't theirs. And to the point where it's like, even as the employer, you're like, well, I can't really blame, I'm not blaming you for this. And maybe I push a little less hard because you're right, it's not your mistake, but you do have to clean it up. But there is something to be said about you being responsible to clean up your own mess that I think a lot of the big CROs, to your point, lack. And I think that at scale maybe is partially the reason for the decrease in quality over the last decade
I think
ish.
that's a very likely possibility.
One of.
Absolutely.
All right. One more, I guess, because there's a lot of people watching that are looking to get in, or maybe they just started, and you're like a time traveler for them, because you're like me, almost 20 years in. What do you think, if anything, you would have done differently in your career, knowing what you know now?
No, this is gonna be antithetical to what I just said. I wouldn't have stayed at 12 years at one place. I
Why?
mean, well, because I could have made more money. I mean, that's how you make money now, unfortunately, because there's just no incentive with the way that the turnover is at the CRO world. There's no incentive for them to increase your raise. I mean, they've tried it, like during COVID. I know, like when there was a lot of turnover and in the industry at CROs, there was a ton of turnover, all CROs around 2020, 2019, 2020, 2021. And there's massive amounts of turnover. And I don't know. I think people kind of like once COVID was like going crazy, people were like, "Whoa, wait a minute! I got a job. I should keep it." But there were some people that were laid off because of COVID, and then the industry went crazy trying to hire more CRAs to do all the COVID studies. But like, I stayed at a company for 12 years, and I always got whenever I got a promotion. Do you really think I got market value of the person coming in off the street? No.
I would hope so, but it's not how it works, huh?
I mean, well, you say that, but that's not the people coming in from an outside organization with equivalent experience always got more money.
You think that's
From
something
what I saw.
fundamentally broken? Because I don't blame the individuals for that. I agree with you. I'm with you. That's
No.
not a bad idea if you had to do it over, but that sounds like something the CRO, that sounds like something that should be an easy fix.
No. So there were incentives previously. So when I first started, before I got into it, there were retention bonuses that were given out to CRAs. There were prorated, and it was like a prorated bonus. And then they also had prorated penalties if you left after like three, because it takes the training at the time, it took $30,000 to $40,000 to train a CRA,
Wow.
and anywhere from 25 to 30 or 40. I never got a full number, or a full budget of it, but it was very expensive. So CROs would have these, especially CROs that were known for training and taking a risk on CRA level ones, like novice CRAs, had these retention bonuses and penalties. So, like, if you left after 2 years, you had to pay back a certain percentage of the amount that trained you. And then if you stayed 3 years, you got like a $15,000 bonus, which in 2010 was a lot for a CRA making $50,000, 50, $60,000. So, there were things like that, and then right around the time that I was getting into it, those dried up. They were gone. They were gone.
I remember when, like, there were more CROs, There was Kendall. I remember that was one of the first ones I worked with on a study. There was just like more of the CROs. I think consolidation kind of has a lot of blame in this. Probably good for the investors, probably bad for the industry, I would say. But I remember CROs getting stock options, and then they would be invested in the success of, let's say, Kendall when Kendall got acquired. I think it was by INC, if I remember correctly. All those CROs got to cash out, you know, they got to share in the reward, financial rewards. And I don't see that, or at least I don't hear too much about that happening anymore, probably because the companies are too big now and it's not so easy to give stock options to everyone when you're that big of a company and there's only like four of them out there instead of like 40 like it used to be. But yeah, definitely maybe there's change coming. I don't know. I think why are the CROs buying site networks all of a sudden? You know, that should kind of tell you something about what they believe to be the state of the industry also.
No, I think, I mean, I don't really have an insight on why CROs are buying site networks, but I would assume there's a multi-prong approach to retaining and gaining business from sponsors. One, that they want to be able to say, look at all these sites that we have that will be available for your study. There are sites, they're good. We've trained them, whatever marketing BS they ascribe to that. And then the other flip side of that is think of it like a phase one clinic, right? So like the big CROs have phase one clinics and they have the doctors, the CRAs, the study coordinators, they all work for the CRO. Okay. The patients don't. Obviously, I mean, they're different. It's phase one. So they have these phase one clinics. And then how is that like buying all these site network? How is that not similar to an expanded phase three clinic that's just decentralized?
They've got to add revenue streams, right? They're once you're publicly traded at that level, investors live quarter to quarter, and so do the executive teams. And if that means getting rewarded a study because you have a bigger site network, then you're going to get awarded the study. That's in the sponsor's eyes, one way to guarantee enrollment. Hey, well, this CRO owns like half of the sites, so let's use them for the study, right? Makes
Right. But
sense.
at the same time, like I don't know how that translates. I haven't seen that model yet, right?
Yeah,
So
we
I
haven't.
haven't so I don't know how that's going to translate to enrollment.
I think that's the next bubble to pop, like the SMO. You and I came in right when the SMO bubble was popping. Right.
Yeah.
And I think we might be entering a new bubble of like huge site networks owned either by PE or large healthcare systems or CROs that just move numbers but don't really care about quality, maybe. I don't
Well, I
know.
mean, look at how the CROs are set up. Look how they structure their contracts. Like there's no penalties if you don't meet enrollment.
It's in their incentive to
Yeah,
drag the
they're
study.
incentivized to be inefficient and drag it out as long as possible. I mean, there's when going through the training for project management and all that, you go through all these different types of budget. There's like unitized budget, there's milestone-based budget, there's budgets with penalties and bonuses. And then there's time and materials. There's all these different type of budgets, and all the CROs, their favorite one is unitized budget because they can bill project management monthly, all these fees monthly, and it doesn't matter if the study's going on 20 years or 20 months, they're billing monthly. They try to stay away from milestone-based budgets because if they don't meet the milestones, they don't get paid.
Then it used to be that I don't know if they still do it, but like companies like Quintiles before they were IQVIA, they used to get involved end to end. I think this is why they did the phase ones too, They wanted to take the drug from like the idea at first in human all the way to through commercialization. So they would have like a sales team, post marketing. Like they would have IQVIA still has, I think, sales reps. So they do have certain clients that they do have more stake in the game, but I think it's like a small part of their business. I don't think it's the bread and butter of what they do. And they never really delve into the details on these quarterly calls. They just they paint with broad strokes, so it's hard to actually tell unless you know the books of the business, which we don't. But yeah, there's actually a lot of exciting things, I guess, coming up. I mean, supposedly the markets are always right, and if a certain cohort of companies continue to be inefficient and not give the sponsors what they want, ultimately newcomers come in and disrupt. I mean, this is like the history of business cycles. So you can expect something to change at
Yeah.
some point.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think that we're going to start seeing a scale down of larger CROs. I just don't see how else, because as you know, working in a small biotech, small sponsor, I don't want to use a massive CRO anymore.
Right.
Like this one-stop shop of CRO, it's not worth it. Like it's the value is not there for what it's costing. I would rather manage vendors myself or hire somebody, a project manager, to manage the vendors or have to pay the CRO to manage my vendors than use the CRO vendors that are all in-house.
Right.
Oh, it doesn't build any, they say it builds efficiency because they communicate. Nobody's communicating. Not that
Right.
I've seen. Like, and if they do communicate, it's only when they're preparing the meeting minutes or they're preparing the meeting agenda for the meeting a day in advance. Like,
The economies of scale that you're supposed to be get as the sponsor using one-stop shop is skewed in a way that there actually is no economy of scale. Like you can piece it
no, there's a
together
lot of
yourself.
bloatware. There's a lot of bloatware. You know, it's like when you buy a phone and it's got apps on it, you can't delete because it's just part of the phone. You know, that's how like working at big CROs is in a lot of regards. It's like, well, I don't need that. Oh, we're charging it for you anyway. You know.
Interesting. The last thing you can get rid of though is the sites. So maybe that's what the CROs are trying to do. I don't know. We're all trying to figure it out as site owners that are not selling, at least not to CROs. Ultimately, I think it goes into the same hands of the buyers, but we'll see how this plays out. But Justin, I really appreciate it, man. This was a classic. You've been very candid and upfront, and I think it made it for a really good conversation that honestly could have gone 2 more hours. And maybe we'll save it for another one because
Sounds
wouldn't
great.
mind having you on again. Everybody, go connect with Justin on LinkedIn. It's underneath the video or in the show notes if you're listening. And thank you very much, Justin. I appreciate it.
Thank you. One last thing. I am available for consulting and advising as well. So, if anybody wants to reach out about that as well.
There's a hot market for that. Like you said, everyone's trying to figure out the economies of scale, and oftentimes getting a consultant's cheaper than outsourcing everything to a large corporation.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate that. Everyone, hit him up right now. Go connect with him. Like, subscribe, comment, share. Bye-bye.